He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday. It's the Monday edition of the Best Stocks Now show. Following Friday's big Jackson Hole plunge, I called it, in my newsletter over the weekend. And I suppose the market could be worse off than it is right now. We're down another 247 today, and that's on top of, what, 1,008 that we lost on Friday. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and here with Barry Kite, who will be picking apart the Fed's comments. The market picked them apart on Friday in a very fast and rapid way. So we'll get to that here in a moment. Dow down 238 right now to 32,044. We've got, where did that go? We've got the S&P 500 down 24, 4,033. I'm going to call 4,000 the support level now on the S&P 500. I'm going to call the Dow support level 32,000. We're at 32,045. And the NASDAQ right now is down 70. That's 0.6%. It's at 12,071. And we'll be on 12,000 watch for the NASDAQ. The small caps, they're down 0.6%. That seems to be about the number here, 0.6%. Now, on the upside, on the bright side, if you're invested in energy stocks, crude oil is up $2.41 per barrel today, $95.47. And Barry, I set a personal record on Saturday in filling up my car. I'd never paid that much before to fill it up. I let it go way down. I had like 30 miles left on the tank, getting nervous, pull into the station. The numbers, the dials just kept going, and bang, a new all-time record for me. That's lovely. Crude oil at $95.47. We're headed back up. Gold is down, is up $4. Silver's down 18 cents. The euro is at parity right now, 1.00. And the 10-year is up to 3.10. I think we're going to see the 10-year go up and test that 3.4, 3.5 area that it was at earlier this year. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, 23 years in the hot seat. Some days it's hotter than others. Friday it was definitely a hot seat. We had the market down, or the futures down last night, about where the market opened. I think it could be a lot worse. And I do think that the market's just going to get over it. It has in the past. If the earnings picture was starting to fall apart and wobble, I'm not seeing that yet, I would be a little bit more worried. But, you know, I think he went out of his way, Barry, on Friday to, you know, hawkish is the word.
Oh, yeah.
He went out of his way, which is, to me, it's counterintuitive. Generally speaking, as you coming up on an important election in a couple of months here, usually the president puts heat on the Fed. Hey, do anything but hike interest rates between now and the election.
Right, yeah.
And he came out, you know, with guns blazing, and, you know, the whole Fed basically backed him up. And the fact that he said get ready for pain ahead, you know, the whole thing was just a little bit strange to me and a little bit out of character. But... you know, he said what he said. The PCE came in on Friday. I didn't think it was that hot. But, you know, they see things that we don't see. So last week, well, on Friday, let's just begin with Friday. After his announcement, the market actually went positive for just a little. If you blinked your eyes, you missed it. And then it finished on the low of the day, down 1,008 points. You know, the markets were down 2.5% to 3%. I want to say the S&P was down 3%. It was down 142. The NASDAQ got whomped. It was down 497 on Friday. The higher the PE, the more you got stomped because, you know, this fear of rising interest rates. And, you know, oil held in there on Friday. The bond market held in there on Friday. Probably a little bit of flight to safety. The yield curve narrowed to 33 basis points. It was has been as high as 53 basis points. And yet Friday's move took the forward P.E. ratio of the S&P down to 17.6. We got as high as 18.1. And we know how that works if you've been listening to the show. Fear of interest rates going up or interest rates actually going up shrinks multiples. It contracts multiples. And if you've got these NASDAQ stocks trading at 60, 70 time multiples, they're obviously a lot more vulnerable to that shrinkage. The S&P for the week last week was down 4% as Powell affirmed his hawkish rate stance. What do you think? What was behind that, Barry? You got any theories on that?
Well, you know, I think he's probably saw the market get a little bit too complacent for a little while, right, in terms of, you know, we had the market, you know, was running up. Interest rates, I mean, what we were at, I mean, I think we're around 2.6 on the 10-year, not,
that's true.
You know, like a week or so ago. I mean, and so, you know, it's kind of almost like a disconnect between what the Fed was doing, right, and what how the market was reacting. And he was almost like he, you know, was trying to whip the market back into shape, like, no,
yeah,
this is what we need to do. And, you know, I think a couple of things he hit on it, you know, that were interesting to me is, you know, he talked about the, you know, that the hit will eventually affect employment because they're, you know, talking about the jobs number, employment number. And he's, you know, basically kind of admitted that, you know, one of the thing, you know, by the time our job is done, right, then, you know, the employment, you know, unemployment rate's going to tick up. So at some point, you know, they kind of seem like they feel like they have to have an effect on jobs in order to, you know, get the rest of everything they're wanting done from these interest rate increases.
Yeah, that's part of that brace yourself for pain ahead. You might lose your job.
Right, and that's the part where, you know, even though they're predicting a strong, you know, soft landing, when you look at, you know, so when you look at their, you know, various data points or what they, you know, their assumptions, but you know, they admittedly, you know, they have to have an effect on, you know, on the unemployment rate for anything, you know, for anything they're doing really to be effective is really kind of the takeaway that I took from it.
Okay, so now here's my take on this. We began this year with a playbook, and our playbook is still in place, and our playbook's around, well, it was centered around rising interest rates and inflation and global conflict. Those were the three, and shortages. Those were the four big parts of the playbook that we've kind of built our portfolios around. And it did swimmingly for about 6 months, right? And then we had like a 1 or 2 month period of time where you saw oil sell off, prices came down at the gas pump, interest rates started going down, like you mentioned, which they really shouldn't have. But it just seems like you say, I think you nailed it. People became complacent. The market got a little on the giddy side, started running the multiple back up again, started buying the tech stocks once again. Personally, I think we're back to where we were at before the little bout of giddiness, okay? Look at last week. 13 sectors in the market. Only one was up. Guess which one it was? Energy, which we've been focused on all year long, because if you're looking at shortages, if you're looking at inflation, energy is the number one sector in the market for us. The only sector that was up last week was energy. It was up 4.3%. So, you know, on Friday, yeah, the market was down 3%. We weren't down 3%. We were down, but nowhere near 3% because of our energy positions, which did well. And we still have a 40% cash you know, in our overall portfolio. So that also helps on a down days. It's a drag on a big up day, but I just don't feel like being all in right now. I can't find a lot of stuff right now. I'm sure there's more to be found today than there was last week. But every other sector in the market was down. And I'll tell you the other thing that's starting to perk up is commodities. And the fertilizer stocks are breaking out and hitting new highs. So we're kind of going back to where we were in May and June. And this little brief spate of giddiness and complacency. He put an end to that on Friday. Okay, we got more to talk about when we come back. This is Bill Gutterson of Barry Kite. It's the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. It looks to me like the market is just kind of getting over it. It threw a major temper tantrum on Friday. Did not like harumph what Powell said, and the tone of his voice especially. You know, that's what always got me into trouble, Barry, with my mother. It was the tone of my voice, you know.
Always the tone, yeah. Never what you say, it's how you say it.
I don't like the tone of your voice, she would say. Well, I don't think the market liked the tone of his, just hawkish as heck, like bah humbug. He did that a couple years ago back in 2019 or 18. I think it was 18.
Whenever he started, remember when he started raising and ended up basically walked it all back in 2019, which is, you know.
Yeah, he was raising before Christmas. I'll never forget Christmas Eve, the Dow was down like 600 or 700 points. Christmas Eve, couldn't you have waited? And then after the holiday, I think the day after Christmas, it was up 1,000. So that was a wild thing. Now, I want to put this whole Fed funds rate thing in perspective, okay? Let's just take a look at where we're at, because the Cleveland Fed's Loretta Mester says the Fed, she sees the Fed hiking key rate to over 4%. Well, where are we now? Okay, they're going to put up this chart in this week's newsletter. It shows a graph going back to 2017. The Fed was hiking all throughout 2017 and 2018 and got as high as 2.5. That's where the Fed got before they started to level off and then started taking it back. And then, of course, when COVID hit, the Fed funds rates plunged. So we're back at where we were on Christmas Eve of 2018, 2.5. And if Loretta Mester says we're going to 4, well, that would be 275 basis point hikes or 350 basis point hikes. Now you're getting up there. 2.5 is still pretty mild, really, when you put it in overall perspective. But it's not mild if you're in the, you know, the loan business, the mortgage business, and the because you can add on to that Fed fund rate to arrive at, you know, what the 30-year mortgage is. So you figure if we're at 2.5 now, you probably about 2 points, 200 basis points you can add on to that. So if we go to 4%. On the Fed fund rates, then the mortgage rate will go to about 6% somewhere in there if you're just using a little bit of logic here. And that would have a tremendous impact. It's already had a huge impact on home prices, existing home sales, new home sales. That's where the pain is being felt the hardest. But we felt quite a bit of pain here in the stock market. You know, at one point the S&P was down 34%. From peak to trough, and you've got that innovation area of the market. It's down 50% so far this year. So there's been some pain in the bond market. The bond market's down about 10%. Just the mild end, just the U.S. Treasury end of the bond market. Then you get out into the junk bonds and whatnot, they're down a little more. So like I say, it just surprises me that he was so hawkish. The Fed doesn't want to impact an election. And usually there's heavy pressure on them to be dovish leading up. We're 2 months out.
Yeah, and it's almost like the market was daring him to come out strong.
Yeah,
though,
I with mean, the giddiness.
Honestly, yeah, I mean, it's and you think about, you know, interest rates being one tool, and of course, you know, rhetoric being certainly, you know, really since Bernanke, where Bernanke kind of, you know, was one of the first one who, you know, really wanted to make the, you know, the Fed's decisions kind of more transparent, you know, signal not just through policy but also through, you know, rhetoric. And, you know, he's the one, I think, that set up those, you know, the press conferences to begin with. And so, you know, you look at it and, you know, he kind of used, you know, one of the newer tools of monetary policy, right, which is speaking. So,
yeah. Okay. And so now we've got the rest of the world takes note of the Jackson Hole speech. Japan was down 2.7%. The foreign markets were basically, I think they were closed when he was speaking. Europe down about 1.8%. Bitcoin certainly took note. Bitcoin is now under 20,000.
Yeah, I saw it. It just kind of hit me when I saw it this morning. I had to double check and make sure that it was right.
Yeah.
Under 20,000.
Let's see where Bitcoin is at right now. That makes that inverse Bitcoin ETF. I own a little bit of that. I disclosed, not much, just for, you know, have a little hedge
right
in there.
It's over.
Oh, it's back
now,
above
so
20,000.
23.42, but it was below it this morning.
And oil is up over $3 per barrel right now, which, you know, is inflationary in and of itself. Okay, now we do have a few earnings coming in this week. Bed Bath & Beyond, I can hardly wait, you know, until they report. CrowdStrike will report. That's a pretty important, actually, cybersecurity stock. Broadcom will report. That's a pretty important semiconductor stock. Chewy, I can't wait to see how many dog biscuits they sold over online. And Lululemon will report, and then we're pretty much done. Okay, you can put a fork in earnings season. It's done. It was better than expected. The earnings picture so far, knock on wood, has not been dented by the rising interest rates. It's not showing up. Maybe just a little bit here and there. I would say in the consumer discretionary sector, Target, Walmart, those Kohl's, restaurants, they're the ones feeling the pain of inflation right now. And I also saw over the weekend that airline bookings, you know, between all the missteps and misfires on the traveling and canceled flights and everything, and the cost soaring for airline tickets, I see that bookings show signs of cracking. Of course, we're also coming to the end of the summer with the big Labor Day weekend. Get ready for your updated COVID shot. Okay, they've got a new cocktail out there, Barry. We don't know the name of it, but it's going to hopefully. Here's the scary part for me. It's set for a U.S. rollout without human data. Yeah, you know what?
That's interesting.
That's
yeah,
just a little yeah. bit on the scary side there. The vaccines will be available soon after Labor Day, so get your reservation now.
Without human data, huh?
Yeah, without human data. Now, here's another one that I find interesting. When we come back, I've been saying that I think the market's going to return to the fossil fuel stocks. I said that in not this week's newsletter, the week before that. And there's an interesting development here with the refineries and the shipping of gas to our allies in Europe. This is Bill Gunderson. It's the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we're about where we started here today. The Dow down 222, the NASDAQ down 78. We've just went a little bit positive. I'll tell you what's surging right now, the oil and gas stocks. If you just look at the ETF DIG is two times the performance of the Dow Jones Oil and Gas Index. It's up 4.38% right now. As we have a problem in oil and gasoline prices, it looks like they're going to be headed up also here, along with the hawkish rhetoric and all the pressure, you know, the Biden administration has put on the gas and the oil and gas producers. It comes down to supply and demand. And right now, demand is outstretching supply, and you've got oil up to $95 per barrel. The oil and gas stocks were up 4.5% last week, while the market was down 4%. That's a big wide gap there between the worst performing sectors and the best performing sector. And today, I think the White House or the current administration realizes they got a problem. And they're threatening the refiners. The Biden administration has sent warnings to the top U.S. refiners that it may take emergency measures to curb fuel exports as stockpiles of gasoline and diesel remain near historic low levels in the Northeast. Well, you know, I mean, on the one hand, we're releasing a million barrels a day from the strategic oil reserves. That's one reason the stockpiles. I think the stockpile, that are the reserves counted in the stockpiles? I don't know. I would think so. Okay, and here's the other thing. You know, we're a big ally to the NATO countries and Europe, and we're trying to help them out of a jam because we have more than enough. Especially gas, liquid natural gas, which has been liquefied, and we've been shipping it to Europe. And now all of a sudden they're being told not to ship it to Europe. So that's kind of an issue. It's kind of a slap in the face, him bullying our refineries. It's a slap in the face to our European allies trying to diversify energy sources, you know, after they've been pretty much cut off from Russia. And then there's also an issue. The Wall Street Journal says that fuel storage levels will be much higher in the Northeast if not for New York State's natural gas pipeline blockade, which has made the region more dependent on oil. I mean, they're heating their homes with oil, heavy oil, heating oil, because they won't finish that natural gas pipeline in New York. So all kinds of moving parts here. In the meantime, look at what oil's doing today. It's up $3 per barrel, and you're seeing Exxon, Chevron, Valero, Phillips 66, Marathon, Shell. These are all the ones that received letters from the Biden administration.
Yeah, all the refiners, basically.
Yeah, and he basically is threatening them, we'll take action against you. That, you know, I don't know how you do that. That's like saying you can't export iPhones to China or Apple. You can't sell into Latin America. Or, we need them here. I don't know. This is it's just sending out a different message than what we were Europe's ally. We're going to help you out of this. Our liquid natural gas terminals are running at peak capacity, and now all of a sudden, And, of course, it's being loaded onto ships and being exported. Now, all of a sudden, they're in trouble if they do it. And this leads LPL's financial strategist says there's plenty more upside ahead for the energy stocks. You know, the first 6 months of this year, that was about the only sector other than the commodities, especially the fertilizer commodities, that were doing well. And it just seems like we're returning to that. And I continue to say that the oil and gas sector is the best sector in the entire market because it comes down to that supply-demand equation. And with the pressure on them to not produce, to not pollute, to not release global or carbon into the atmosphere, and the shortage worldwide, especially in Europe, it just seems to me like that upwards pressure is going to continue to be there, and LPL agrees.
Well, and natural gas prices, I was reading, you know, are supposedly should be more stickier versus oil because it's oil is used or easier to ship, across the ocean. I mean, of course, we've been loading up oil tankers for years, right?
Yes.
And then, of course, on the liquid natural gas front, right? It's certainly a tighter supply in terms of what can be exported globally, even not just here from the U.S. But it's that's the main thing they use to heat their homes in Europe, in the European region. So they're that part, they may have their gasoline prices at the pump may go down, but their natural gas prices, in their power bill, it was going the other way, going up.
Yeah, so it's, in the quest for green energy, I mean, you still have to balance that with the needs of the economy and the needs of people. The two seem to be at odds with one another right now, and it's causing a lot of disruption. Now, here's LPL's five reasons that they think oil's going higher. Strong fundamentals. China's reopening from COVID-19 lockdowns, technical factors, that sector's up 50% so far this year. Earnings momentum. Energy was definitely the clear winner of the Q2 earnings season. It's also supported dividend hikes and share buybacks. Valuations are too pessimistic, they say. You've got Warren Buffett making Occidental Petroleum his biggest purchase in 2022. That lends a pretty big credible argument, too, that it's not overpriced. Okay, now let's go back to the fertilizer stocks. They surged. They have been surging recently as European capacity is curtailed. Now, here's another one where you've got green energy fighting, the needs of everyday needs of life. Fertilizer and nitrogen are essential to growing our crops and producing food. And where it's going to hit. Here's where the rubber's going to hit the road, Barry, and you're going to see rioting in the street. They're warning the UK of a beer shortage, a major beer shortage, because carbon dioxide is also a byproduct of natural gas. And they're putting the pressure, you see. If you connect the dots, okay, I read a whole article about this. The creation of carbon dioxide from natural gas is one of the biggest carbon-producing the way they do it, the process that they use. It's one of the most carbon, releases more carbon into the air than any other process out there, basically. And so they're, I'm sure, trying to curtail these plants they produce ammonia, and then the byproduct of that is carbon dioxide. And that carbon dioxide goes into Mountain Dew. It goes into sparkling water. It goes into beer.
And Heineken and everything.
Yes.
Right.
So push is going to come to shove here pretty soon. And, you know, CF Industries is getting so much pressure on the carbon part of the equation, they're going to stop producing ammonia. And I saw another one that's going to shut down their ammonia production. And that is where that carbon dioxide shortage is going to come from.
Well, okay. and we're about to have the smallest U.S. corn crop since 2019. So, you know, the fertilizer is important in, you know, in corn yields.
Yes. And, you know, then there's a lot of areas of the world that right now are having drought, which you've got to, you know, try to connect the dots there and say, well, it's because of global warming and whatnot. But still, we've got the land that isn't having droughts, we got to make that as productive as possible. And last but not least, Apple's going to launch iPhone 14. I just don't see the people lining up overnight like we used to for Apple II and Apple III and the Beatles' new latest single, you know. Well, when we come back, there are a lot of stocks popping here today that we'll talk about. This is the Best Stocks Now show.
You gotta go where you wanna go and do what you wanna do.
Back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show, where the market still has a hangover from Friday's big plunge and, you know, just a snarky attitude by our Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, saying, yeah, you know what, get ready for pain.
I mean, he had a weak build-up to that, so he's probably like, you know, he's like, I'm going to, because he's like, I'm going to make sure that it that it lives up to the billing, right? I mean, yeah. I've never seen a speech that was, you know, I think it was an eight minute speech that was, you know, so anticipated, and I mean, it was just all you could talk about was, you know, was the speech happening on Friday, and I didn't even see. It's funny that, and then I didn't even see like the financial channels. I don't even think they got to Jackson Hole until like Thursday.
Yeah,
so it was just. I felt like we were going to the financial Super Bowl or something of that nature.
Man, I'll tell you. Well, okay. So what is moving today? I'm just gonna say in direct contrast here. Who benefits from the Biden administration threatening our refiners? Hey, you know, we don't want to ship anything overseas to help Europe out. We want to keep prices low here in America. You know, we got a big election. That's what it seems like to me. But that didn't happen with interest rates, which I find interesting. So on the other side of this equation, we own a stock called Accelerate Energy. EE is the symbol, and we own that in our ultra growth portfolio because it's not ExxonMobil. It's not, the big one that our friend Warren Buffett is buying. It's Occidental Petroleum. It's a smaller company, but it is a $3 billion company. They provide liquefied natural gas distribution, terminal services, and reliable energy solutions. And I want to say that they're producing it over there in Europe, okay? Much like Equinor is a European company. So we've kind of focused. Number one, we like energy, the whole energy sector in general, solar, lithium, batteries, ion batteries, and natural gas, and oil and gas, and all the companies that are associated with it, the refiners, the drillers, which is counterintuitive because we're going through supposedly this massive transition from dirty fuel to clean fuel, but that's going to be a long time in coming to transition. And a lot of stuff will never be transitioned to, renewable fuels. So Accelerate Energy is, now let's narrow it down a little further. We also like the natural gas a little bit better than crude oil. And if you narrow it down a little bit further, those that are involved in Europe, because they're the ones that really have the problem. Yes, our stockpiles are getting low in the U.S., but we don't have a pipeline coming from another country that's been shut down to like just 20% of capacity like Europe. So Accelerate Energy, EE, is involved in that over there in Europe. And here you've got the Dow is down almost 300 right now. Accelerate's up 5.8% right now. Has a really nice chart. It's profitable. It just went public back in March, April. And their thing is floating platforms. They did a big deal with Finland. Finland's in trouble, too, like the rest of them, trying to get enough fuel. Winter's approaching. This is Labor Day coming up, you know. The longest day of the year is way in the past here. We're starting to approach fall and winter around the corner. Finland's scrambling. Well, Accelerate Energy has floating platforms that convert natural gas to liquid natural gas, and this is what they need in Europe. So that's one, I would say. Is popping off the page to me here today on huge volume. And I think it's reacting to the news that, you know, we're not going to help out, it seems like. Okay, now the other area of energy, it's all over the place on a daily basis, but it seems like they're looking more and more at nuclear as being an answer. It's always been an answer, but, you know, there's anti-nuclear, forces too. Uranium Energy, UEC, which I own a little bit of. I always disclose that. I'm not mentioning this because it's going to move my 100 shares or whatever it is I own. I don't know what I own, but I have a pretty much, with our clients, we are a lot of exposure more than normal to the energy of all ilk. And UEC, Uranium Energy, it's up 10.8% today. It could just as well be down 10.8% tomorrow. It's very volatile. But there seems to be a move towards uranium and towards the nuclear power plants. Germany is absolutely against it, whereas France is for it. And then the last one, I'll just throw out a big name. Look at Exxon today, one of the most hated companies in the world by the Greenpeace and the green energy adherence. Exxon is a beautiful chart on Exxon, gorgeous. A relative strength of 96. I mean, Exxon's a stock that kind of went nowhere for a long, long time, and all of a sudden they got the goods that everybody needs. And they're global, so they're also part of that European solution. Not really a solution, Band-Aid. Exxon is up 3% today. That's a blue chip. That's a $500 billion company right there. And it has a dividend yield of 3.5%. So growth and a dividend. That's what we really like. Okay, so that's the show for today. I think eventually the market's just going to get used to the what he said on Friday, what Powell said. But I think it's kind of put a kibosh on all of this speculative stuff we've seen in Bitcoin and Bed Bath & Beyond and the meme stocks. And to some extent, the technology stocks, which maybe got a little bit overheated. If you'd like to get the newsletter from last Friday, man, there was a lot in it. GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com. If you'd like to talk to us about your portfolio, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.